A lady in a stout tweed skirt, who was bending over a flower bed, straightened herself at our approach. "Hello, Evie. Here's our wounded hero, Mr. Hastings, Miss Howard." Miss Howard shook hands with a hearty, almost painful grip. I had an impression of very blue eyes in a sunburnt face. She was a pleasant-looking woman of about 40, with a deep voice, almost manly in its stentorian tones, and had a large, sensible, square body, with feet to match. These last encased in good, thick boots. Her conversation, I soon found, was couched in the telegraphic style. "Weeds grow like house afire. Can't keep even with them. Shall press you in. Better be careful." "I'm sure I shall be only too delighted to make myself useful," I responded.
"Don't say it. Never does. Wish you hadn't later."
"You're a cynic, Evie," said John, laughing.
"Where's tea today? Inside or out?"
"Out. Too fine a day to be cooped up in the house."
"Come on, then. You've done enough gardening for today. The labourer is worthy of his hire, you know. Come and be refreshed."
"Well," said Miss Howard, drawing off her gardening gloves, "I'm inclined to agree with you." She led the way round the house to where tea was spread under the shade of a large sycamore. A figure rose from one of the basket chairs and came a few steps to meet us.
"My wife, Hastings," said John.
I shall never forget my first sight of Mary Cavendish. Her tall, slender form outlined against the bright light, the vivid sense of slumbering fire that seemed to find expression only in those wonderful tawny eyes of hers, remarkable eyes, different from any other woman's that I have ever known. The intense power of stillness she possessed, which nevertheless conveyed the impression of a wild and tamed spirit in an exquisitely civilized body. All these things are burnt into my memory. I shall never forget them. She greeted me with a few words of pleasant welcome in a low, clear voice, and I sank into a basket chair, feeling distinctly glad that I had accepted John's invitation. Mrs. Cavendish gave me some tea, and her few quiet remarks heightened my first impression of her as a thoroughly fascinating woman. An appreciative listener is always stimulating, and I described, in a humorous manner, certain incidents of my convalescent home, in a way which, I flattered myself, greatly amused my hostess. John, of course, good fellow though he is, could hardly be called a brilliant conversationalist. At that moment, a well-remembered voice floated through the open French window near at hand.
"Then you'll write to the Princess after tea, Alfred? I'll write to Lady Tadminster for the second day myself. Or shall we wait until we hear from the Princess? In case of a refusal, Lady Tadminster might open it the first day, and Mrs. Crosby the second. Then there's the Duchess, about the school fete."
There was a murmur of a man's voice, and then Mrs. Inglethorpe's rose in reply.
"Yes, certainly. After tea will do quite well. You are so thoughtful, Alfred, dear."
The French window swung open a little wider, and a handsome, white-haired old lady, with a somewhat masterful cast of features, stepped out of it onto the lawn. A man followed her, a suggestion of deference in his manner. Mrs. Inglethorpe greeted me with effusion.
"Why, if it isn't too delightful to see you again, Mr. Hastings, after all these years! Alfred, darling, Mr. Hastings, my husband."
I looked with some curiosity at Alfred, darling. He certainly struck a rather alien note. I did not wonder at John objecting to his beard. It was one of the longest and blackest I have ever seen. He wore gold-rimmed pince-nez, and had a curious impassivity of feature. It struck me that he might look natural on the stage, but was strangely out of place in real life. His voice was rather deep and unctuous. He placed a wooden hand in mine and said,
"This is a pleasure, Mr. Hastings." Then, turning to his wife, "Emily, dearest, I think that cushion is a little damp."
She beamed fondly on him as he substituted another with every demonstration of the tenderest care. Strange infatuation of an otherwise sensible woman. With the presence of Mr. Inglethorpe, a sense of constraint and veiled hostility seemed to settle down upon the company. Miss Howard, in particular, took no pains to conceal her feelings.
Mrs. Inglethorpe, however, seemed to notice nothing unusual. Her volubility, which I remembered of old, had lost nothing in the intervening years, and she poured out a steady flood of conversation, mainly on the subject of the forthcoming bazaar, which she was organizing and which was to take place shortly. Occasionally she referred to her husband over a question of days or dates. His watchful and attentive manner never varied. From the very first I took a firm and rooted dislike to him, and I flatter myself that my first judgments are usually fairly shrewd. Presently Mrs. Inglethorpe turned to give some instructions about letters to Evelyn Howard, and her husband addressed me in his painstaking voice. "Is soldiering your regular profession, Mr. Hastings?" "No, before the war I was in Lloyd's." "And you will return there after it is over?" "Perhaps. Either that or a fresh start altogether." Mary Cavendish leant forward. "What would you really choose as a profession if you could just consult your inclination?"
"Well, that depends."
"No secret hobby?" she asked. "Tell me, you're drawn to something?" "Everyone is, usually something absurd."
"You laugh at me,"
she smiled. "Perhaps."
"Well, I've always had a secret hankering to be a detective."
"The real thing, Scotland Yard, or Sherlock Holmes?"
"Oh, Sherlock Holmes, by all means. But really, seriously, I am awfully drawn to it. I came across a man in Belgium once, a very famous detective, and he quite inflamed me. He was a marvellous little fellow. He used to say that all good detective work was a mere matter of method. My system is based on his, though of course I have progressed rather further. He was a funny little man, a great dandy, but wonderfully clever."
"Like a good detective story myself," remarked Miss Howard. "Lots of nonsense written, though. Criminal discovered in last chapter. Everyone dumbfounded. Real crime, you'd know at once."
"There have been a great number of undiscovered crimes," I argued.
"Don't mean the police, but the people that are right in it. The family. You couldn't really hoodwink them. They'd know."
"Then," I said, much amused, "you think that if you were mixed up in a crime, say a murder, you'd be able to spot the murderer right off?"
"Of course I should. Mightn't be able to prove it to a pack of lawyers, but I'm certain I'd know. I'd feel it in my fingertips if he came near me."
"It might be a she," I suggested.
"Might, but murder's a violent crime. Associate it more with a man."
"Not in a case of poisoning," Mrs. Cavendish's clear voice startled me. "Dr. Bauerstein was saying yesterday that, owing to the general ignorance of the more uncommon poisons among the medical profession, there were probably countless cases of poisoning quite unsuspected."
"Why, Mary, what a gruesome conversation," cried Mrs. Inglethorpe. "It makes me feel as if a goose were walking over my grave. Oh, there's Cynthia."
A young girl in VAD uniform ran lightly across the lawn.
"Why, Cynthia, you are late today. This is Mr. Hastings, Miss Murdoch."
Cynthia Murdoch was a fresh-looking young creature, full of life and vigour. She tossed off her little VAD cap, and I admired the great loose waves of her auburn hair, and the smallness and whiteness of the hand she held out to claim her tea. With dark eyes and eyelashes, she'd have been a beauty. She flung herself down on the ground beside John, and as I handed her a plate of sandwiches, she smiled up at me.
"Sit down here on the grass, do. It's ever so much nicer."
I dropped down obediently.
"You work at Tadminster, don't you, Miss Murdoch?"
She nodded.
"For my sins."
"Do they bully you, then?" I asked, smiling.
"I should like to see them," cried Cynthia with dignity.
"I have got a cousin who is nursing," I remarked, "and she's terrified of sisters."
"I don't wonder. Sisters are, you know, Mr. Hastings. They simply are. You've no idea. But I'm not a nurse, thank heaven. I work in the dispensary."
"How many people do you poison?" I asked, smiling. Cynthia smiled, too.
"Oh, hundreds," she said.
"Cynthia," called Mrs. Inglethorpe, "do you think you could write a few notes for me?"
"Certainly, Aunt Emily."
She jumped up promptly, and something in her manner reminded me that her position was a dependent one, and that Mrs. Inglethorpe, kind as she might be in the main, did not allow her to forget it. My hostess turned to me. "John will show you your room. Supper is at 7:30. We have given up late dinner for some time now. Lady Tadminster, our member's wife, she was the late Lord Abbotsbury's daughter, does the same. She agrees with me that one must set an example of economy. We are quite a war household. Nothing is wasted here. Every scrap of waste paper, even, is saved and sent away in sacks." I expressed my appreciation, and John took me into the house and up the broad staircase, which forked right and left halfway to different wings of the building.